Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, today, a scene unfolded down in front of the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., near the United States Capitol. Now, we have this year seen this kind of situation unfold before. For some reason, right now, people in this country seem to be committed, seem to be bent on taking America back. Back to what? And back for whom is the question that we wrestle with. But people want to take this country back. And it's interesting because no one talked about taking America back until Barack Obama was president. When we had a black man as the president of this here great United States of America, all of a sudden we needed to, quote, take America back. Again, I say back from what? Back to whom, right? Because if you ask that kind of question, then it gets more complicated. Then this notion of, oh, it's just about making sure we can be free. Because if it's just about freedom, then I think that's where the discussion needs to go. Because it seems like right now, everybody feels like they're not free. Everybody. Now, we know black folks have been saying for years that we don't feel free in this country. And I'd say years, I mean years upon years upon years, right? And some of this is based in reality. You can go all the way back to 1672. You can go back to 1757. You can go back to 1863. And when black folks, they didn't feel free because they were not legally free. I get that. When black folks say they don't feel free in this country, you can go back to the Jim Crow era. You can go back to the days of mass lynching. You can go back to water hoses and dogs, you know, being unleashed on black folks, demanding the rights and freedoms that are afforded to them through the Constitution of the United States and through laws and amendments. So I get when black folks say they don't feel free. When folks who are Hispanic, who are white but of Hispanic origin and background, when they say they don't feel free, I get it. We know how black and brown people are treated in this here great experiment called democracy. Like, we get it. When women of different races and ethnicities say they don't feel free, I mean, I get it. I get it, right? Because we understand how sexism works in America. We understand about sexual assault and sexual harassment and the high incidences of rape across this nation of ours. We get hashtag Me Too. So when women say they don't feel free, when people who are LGBTQIA from that community, when they say they don't feel free, I get it. I get it. What I don't get, and you know where I'm going, I don't get when white men who have historically been on the top of the heap, who have historically made more money than any other race or ethnicity other than Asian American men, who hold the majority of the CEO positions here, Fortune 500 companies, who hold the majority of positions as, you know, presidents of universities and institutions, who hold a number of seats in Congress, whether we're talking about the national level of government or the more local level of government, who have been the voice, the spokespeople for Americans and America all over this globe. I don't get it when white men say that they don't feel free. It's Thursday, y'all. You know what happens on Thursday. When the left meets the right, let's have some real talk here. For people that are right-leaning, if you are a white man, I want you to call me, 410-319-8880. You got to help me understand what it means when a white man says, I want my freedom. What does that mean? Why are we having this conversation? Because I'm sure some of you who've been at work all day or been in front of Netflix or Hulu all day, I'm like, okay, well, what's going on here that I need to be concerned about white men demanding their freedom? Washington, D.C. today. Today, a white man who has been identified as Ray Roseberry. They have identified him. They've released his name. I'm not giving you new information on Ray Roseberry. He is a white man, a MAGA supporter, M-A-G-A, Make America Great Again supporter, who has used his social media platforms in the past to garner support for and raise funds for Donald Trump, the Trumplican Party. For some reason, Ray Roseberry from North Carolina, instead of going to work like most of us are, instead of going and hanging out at the coffee shop like some folks are, instead of just doing Netflix and chill, right? Ray got up and said, you know what, baby, I'm going to D.C. today. Like, okay, so brother man, for some reason, right, chose to pack up his pickup truck, come on up here from North Carolina. Now, I'm from South Carolina. I can tell you there's a lot going on in the Cackey-Lackey. Seriously, it is. There's a lot of racism going on down there. South Carolina was the first state to secede from the Union, and our sister's North Carolina. Well, dude is from Grover, North Carolina. I looked up Grover, North Carolina. Ain't that many black folks in Grover, North Carolina. In fact, it is one of those cities, you know, like the sundown cities. Black folks don't hang out in Grover, North Carolina for too long. So dude said, you know what, I got some business, honey, in D.C. Now, maybe his sweetie thought maybe he was going to storm the Capitol because, you know, that's what we do when we say we got business. I mean, he did it January 6th. Now, I don't know if he was there, Mr. Ray Roseberry, whose first name actually is Floyd Ray Roseberry. I'm not saying he was there on January 6th. I don't know, right? I mean, there were so many people there on January 6th. It was a homecoming party. So he could have easily been there on January 6th. Maybe he overslept. People did that for the March on Washington, right? They set their alarm clock for the March on Washington. I'm going to D.C. to march for jobs and freedom, right? And they missed the bus, right? The alarm clock went off. They didn't get up, so they didn't make it. Okay, maybe Ray overslept on January 6th. So that was the day to be there. That was the day they got in. That was the day they broke the windows. That was the day they broke into Nancy Pelosi's office. That was the day they stole her podium. That was the day when they had their feet up on Kwesi Mfume's desk. It was that day that Ray probably should have made his stand, gotten his fleece shirt out of the cleaners and said, you know what, I'm going to D.C., baby, because we're getting ready to take this country back. Ray didn't get that memo. Who knows what happened? Maybe Ray was there. And he just didn't get enough publicity. In either case, Ray decided to stage his one-man show. And he headed up to D.C. in the pickup truck. Hear me out. With homemade bombs. Now, I am not someone, if you haven't figured out yet, right? I mean, I use the World Wide Web for research. I do my social media on the World Wide Web. I do my emails on the World Wide Web. I have been known occasionally to go onto a site called Amazon and push a button and order stuff on the World Wide Web. What I have not done is downloaded instructions for how to make a bomb or how to make a gun. I haven't done that. Dude drove up from Grover, North Carolina with some homemade bombs. He said, I'm going to take this country back, I'm going to get my freedom. Now, this is where it gets a little confusing in this story here, right? You got to help me here. Because what makes him think that the Library of Congress, he probably got lost. Like, MapQuest wasn't working because the Library of Congress is a library. It's actually the largest library in this country. What makes him think, I'm going to go to the Library of Congress so I can take back my freedom? Not research my freedom, not look up my freedom, not define my freedom, not spell my freedom, not negotiate for my freedom. I'm going to take it back from the Library of Congress. Now, Library of Congress is not that far from the Capitol, so maybe he couldn't find parking. D.C. is hard to park in D.C., so let me pull over. But he shows up with these bombs, and what he does, which before people go, well, it's mental illness, dude did what you and I have done. I'm looking at Dre. I'm looking at Justina, because Justina doesn't do a lot on social media. But he live streamed. He live streamed sitting in his pickup truck in front of the Library of Congress stating what he wanted. He asked for two things, right? I have no idea. If you see the pictures, there's a bunch of money on the ground. I have no idea what the money's for. I don't know if he was throwing money out the window. I have no idea why there was dollar bills, y'all, all over the ground. I have no idea whether people were throwing money at him. I don't know. I just know he's in his pickup truck, parked up on the sidewalk near the Library of Congress, dollar bills, but he has like a bomb in his lap, and he's live streaming. He asked for two things. He asked for his freedom, and I just want to add that freedom ain't never been free, right? Let's just say, I'm just going to go ahead and quote my own people. Freedom ain't never been free. That's what, you know, Malcolm X said. It was a Coretta Scott King said, freedom has to be won by every generation. Like, it's never completely earned, right? And it wasn't Malcolm X who also said, if you're not willing to die for your freedom, take the word out your vocabulary. Freedom ain't free, y'all. He said, I'm going to get my freedom. Then he asked for another thing, which I thought was very interesting. You got this bomb. You're in D.C. You're up on the curb. You're at the Library of Congress. And he asked for Joe Biden on the phone. He wanted to have a conversation with Joe Biden. Now, right now in D.C., as the scene is unfolding, there are about 7 ambulances out there. There are multiple fire trucks out there. So he was in his live stream attack. Facebook cut that off. It took a minute, though. Why don't we go quickly now to the Capitol Police Conference? Let's get some feedback from them. And then I want to talk to you to follow up on an article that was published that said the greatest threat to America is white men right now, and have been for a long time.
Accompanied by D.C. Metropolitan Police Department Chief Robert Conti, Chief Major.
First, I want to thank you all for your patience. Sorry to keep you so far away, but safety is our number one focus on this during this incident. Around 9:15 this morning, a man in a black pickup truck drove onto the sidewalk in front of the Library of Congress near First and Independence Southeast. We responded to a disturbance call. The driver of the truck told the responding officer on the scene that he had a bomb and what appeared, the officer said, appeared to be a detonator in the man's hand. So we immediately evacuated the nearby buildings. As you all know, the House and Senate are on recess, but there's still people working throughout some of the buildings that were nearby this location. I don't want to get into the negotiations that are ongoing. I know that some information has come out on been live streamed, so I know you all may have some information, but my negotiators are hard at work trying to have a peaceful resolution to this incident. Not only do we have U.S. Capitol Police on the scene, but the Metropolitan Police Department of Washington, D.C. is with us, the FBI, Washington Field Office, ATF, and, of course, D.C. Fire and EMS. So I'll take any questions that you all have.
Chief Major, can you tell us why he's doing this?
Is the suspect live streaming hurting your investigation, or is it helping your investigation?
So we're trying to get as much information as we can to find a way to peacefully resolve this. So we are in communication with the suspect, but I don't want to talk about exactly what we're talking about because the negotiations are ongoing.
Can you tell us why he's doing this?
We don't.
That was Chief Tom Manger, the chief of Capitol Police. What Ray Roseberry put out there in a series of videos posted to Facebook. Facebook is always on. It took him a minute to shut things down. Now, I just want to make a note, just as a side note, my editorial comment. I put something up there that Facebook doesn't like. They shut me down very quickly. They're always shutting me down, snatching the music. But nevertheless, Ray got through, and he said, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and quote it. Because some stuff you can't make up, folks. I'm going to quote exactly what Floyd Ray Roseberry from Grover, North Carolina, what he said outside of the Library of Congress in a pickup truck with homemade bombs, by the way, that he told the cops. The bombs are so, you know, they're so unstable. If a bullet goes through the window and the window breaks, the bomb, everything's going to blow up. I was like, dude, you may have built this wrong. Like, so you're not planning to get out of this. But while he was not planning to get out of it, he was posting videos in live time because he wants you to real time with him. Here's his quote. You thought the South wasn't coming. Well, Joe Biden's time has come. The roads are blocked, and I'm waiting for your call. The roads were blocked with Capitol Chief Police, but okay, the roads were blocked. Let me continue. These are his comments. Quote, come out here and talk to me, Joe. America's tired of it, period. What I think is interesting is I want to go back to just one little sentence he said. There's a lot that we can unpack, right? Come on out, Joe, America's tired. I mean, because he has taken upon himself to speak for America, right? But that one sentence, you thought the South wasn't coming. I want us to go a little deeper with that. Because I'm making the argument that we've really become situated as two different countries. And it didn't start with COVID-19. Hear me when I tell you, it didn't start there. I'm taking us all the way back to 1862 when South Carolina made that decision to secede from the Union. Way back then, they were going to set everything up. They were going to become their own country. Remember, when the secession plan went down, 9 states left. This idea, we're going to have our own country, the Confederate States of America. We're going to leave this United States of America, leave this Union, and we're going to have our own country. We can make our own laws, have our own rules, have our own presidents, and keep people enslaved for as long as we want them to be enslaved. I think we got to talk about how it was back then that America became two nations. And I don't think we ever came together since then. Now people are pushing back here, right? They're like, no, the South loves us. No, they don't. Okay, let's go back. South Carolina, now, I took you to 1862. Come with me on this road and go back a little bit farther, right? 1862 is when there's a flurry. What's going to happen? You know, by 1863, you're like, well, man, we are full-fledged into the war. Emily Davis is writing about the war. This thing ended by 1865. Let's go back a little bit, just a little bit. On December 20th of 1860, 5 years before the war ended, 5 years before the ratification of the 13th Amendment, 5 years before black folks were legally free, 3 years before black men were able to fight for their freedom in this country, because Frederick Douglass said you get a musket on your shoulder, get a uniform on your back, and they can't ever enslave you again. December 20th, 1860, a day that really should go down like we talk about D-Day, I learned about December 20th, 1860. They used to talk about it whenever we would have those, like those summer school clubs, vacation Bible school. Like, you know, most of the time my Nana would take me to the black churches for VBS. But every now and then we'd pop into the other churches. And in the other churches, they would talk about the fact that the Civil War wasn't a civil war. It was a war of Northern aggression. That's a very different way of looking at a civil war. You know, between, you know, the South and the North is very different from a war of northern aggression, which when I was learned teaching about it and understanding it and being taught about it, it was one country, the USA, the United States of America, coming against another country, the CSA, the Confederate States of America. That's not a civil war. They call it the War of Northern Aggression. December 20th, 1860, South Carolina, my home state, South Kakilaki, where I was born and spent every summer of my life, even through college, it became the first state to secede from the Federal Union. The secession of South Carolina precipitated the outbreak of the American Civil War in the Charleston Harbor on April 12, 1861. We all talk about 1862, you know, because 1862 is when you start thinking about the Emancipation Proclamation from Lincoln. We put it out in September, then in 100 days on January 1st, 1863, he was going to, like, set all the slaves free, which we know was not what happened. But we don't go back to how we got here. To get to the 1862, you got to go back to 1860. It was back then, I really believe, that slavery versus industrializing this nation is what tore us apart. You got to think about the fact that when slavery ended, there were close to 4 million enslaved men, women, and children in the South. Close to 4 million. The people, when slavery ended, never knew what freedom felt like, never understood freedom, had no connections to the motherland. This is generations upon generations of being born enslaved, dying enslaved. You, your mama, your mama's mama, your mama's mama's mama. You keep going back. Your whole legacy is of being enslaved in this country. That does something to the psyche. I'm not going to go down the road of the post-traumatic slave disorder because we talk about that a lot. I want to go on the other side. Just hear me out. The post-traumatic plantation owner disorder. We have to understand that in order for slavery to have continued, to have the stronghold where people were blindly following it, being able to oppress another race of people, being able to beat them, rape them, separate families, to not be moved by their tears or their pleas to be free. In order for all of that to happen, somewhere along the line, there was a hardening of the spirit and a belief that you were put here on this planet to rule, reign, be the overlord of Black people. So if that's where you were, if that's what you believe, then today I'm going to take my pickup truck to Washington, D.C., because I want my freedom. And you know what? A Black woman got shot when she made a U-turn downtown in D.C. He rode into town with a bomb, and they're negotiating with him to find out what he wants. We're going to talk about that. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to open up the phone lines to you because you don't have to agree. Let's talk about it. You can also send me a tweet at Kay Whitehead, K-A-Y-E Whitehead. Give us a call, 410-319-8888. Let's have this conversation. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So when I left you, we were in 1820. In fact, on December 20th, 1820, to be exact, when South Carolina seceded from the Union because a Republican had become president, Abraham Lincoln, even though I know all Blacks are Democrats now, and we all, you know, in mass, like, we got to vote for a Democratic candidate. You know, we've always been Democratic. We haven't. Black folks have not always been Democratic in this country. In fact, we were Republican. We were Douglas Republicans, Frederick Douglass Republicans. And we moved to the Democratic Party. I mean, that happened in the 60s. Traditionally and historically, we were part of the Republican Party. The South succeeded because a Republican, Abraham Lincoln, had been elected president. And Abraham Lincoln had talked about how he was a bit reticent on expanding slavery, not getting rid of slavery. Let's be clear. Lincoln did not campaign on, I'm getting rid of slavery. It's going to end and everybody's going to get free. You got your freedom and you get your freedom and you get your freedom. No. He said he didn't want to expand it. And all the deals that were made around the Three-Fifths Compromise, if you bring in a free state, you got to bring in an enslaved state to keep this balance. The South, starting with South Carolina, said no. And it was around this issue of slavery. And I think that when people want to say it was really about wanting to have more factories, I mean, let's just call it what it was. The South wanted to keep black folks enslaved. They needed black folks to be enslaved. Not just want it, right? I think we have to separate the want of the South for black folks to be enslaved and the need of the South for black folks to be enslaved. Ira Berlin, may he rest in peace, Dr. Ira Berlin from the University of Maryland out at College Park, wrote a series of books where he kind of delves into looking at the impact of slavery in America. I mean, he goes deep with the work, taking a look at the primary sources, really kind of parsing it out. But one of the things that I know, because I looked at his work very, very closely when I was working on my PhD, but Ira Berlin makes the argument that you can have two types of societies. You can have a society with slaves, and you can have a slave society. Now, if you peel this back, in the North, there was a society with slaves from the South. This is, you know, the Southern economy, and some would add the economy of the entire country, was based upon enslaved labor in the South. Now, the North did not have enslaved people by the time we get to this point in history, but they were benefiting from it. Like, I mean, if cotton was king, cotton had to come up to the factories in the North in order to be sent off. I mean, the North was benefiting, as was everybody who was making money from slavery. You may not have owned, you know, Miss Betty, right? You may not have owned Miss Betty, but you benefited from Miss Betty's labor, even if you were up in Maine or Vermont or New York, right? That's a society with slaves. Your income, your entire economy is not based upon the labor of enslaved people, though you may benefit from it. And then you had a slave society where slavery, the buying and selling of men, women, and children, selling out their labor, looking to rape women and reproduce your labor force, keeping them unpaid, keeping them in the field, keeping them working from sun up to sun down. Close to 4 million enslaved people. You're a slave society. Slavery sits at the heart of your economic base. The South needed slavery. No, they say they just wanted it. They needed it in order for it to last. And so when South Carolina succeeded in 1860, it just lit a spark that continued. Now, why are we talking about South Carolina from 1860 and what happened in front of the Library of Congress today? I think, and you can disagree, and we can talk about this at 410-319-8888. I think that the two pieces are connected. I think these are two pieces of the same puzzle, that there's something to be said about being raised to believe that you are the sun and the rest of us just rotate around you. Even though you're thinking that we're a long way off from 1860, I don't think that in some places, like Grover, North Carolina, like Columbia, South Carolina, like down in Memphis, Tennessee, like Little Rock, Arkansas, like Dallas, Texas, there's some places where that belief is so ingrained that we see it play out in everything. And having a black man occupy the most powerful position on the planet was for a number of people kind of that straw when you talk about the camel's back. Watching people who don't look like you migrate to this country, and as you in your eyes take your jobs from you. I'm sitting home with no job, and you're working, and I'm an American, and you're not. Still part of that teaching. It's saying about Obama, he should go back to Africa. Now, in Obama's case, his father was Kenyan, but when they say it to me, I'm like, okay, we're talking, you know, generations upon generations for me to go back to Africa. Using the N-word. It's all connected. And MAGA, Make America great again. Fails to answer the most important questions that I believe that I put on the floor. When you talk about taking this country back, taking it back from whom and giving it back to whom? Who gets the country? If you take it back from who? Black folks? Brown folks? Who are you taking it back from? And who are you giving it to? That's part of the discussion here. Are we talking about the ways in which we are defining and understanding America? 410-319-8888. I want to go back to the clip that we have of the Capitol Chief Police. If we can pull that back up, I want to hear just a little bit more about where they are advancing, because they are still in negotiations. It's an active bomb threat investigation. According to the news reports we've received, there's at least seven ambulances there. There are fire trucks there. But it's going on. Again, he went there because he said he wanted his freedom. Can we talk about what that looks like when you talk about being free? A couple of comments here from Facebook Live. And well, one is Rashad Johnson. Rashad wants to know, can we talk about accountability for power outages in Baltimore? My power is out again for the third time over the past 7 days. Sandtown resident, Justina, you know what, Rashad, we got you. We will put that so we can figure out what's happening down in Sandtown, Winchester. Kim Williams says, you know, just go to work, and when complaints come from Caucasian clients, you know it's due to the stereotyping of black women. Eric says there's far too much available on the World Wide Web. Years ago, back when people actually used libraries, there's certain books that were flagged that people checked them out. Why wouldn't instructions for bomb making be monitored? Training is one thing. The internet is something else. Leonora Habersham said, look, he just saw Congress and went there. And he's tired. He said he's tired now. Kim put in, the South has been planning a war with the North as soon as the Civil War is over. They've taken him into custody. That's what it looks like, according to Eric. And when we talk about what America, make America great again, means let's put those black and brown folks back in their place. Comments off the Facebook live stream, you're free to join that stream and kind of chime in and let us know what you're thinking about this. Juanita says, it saddens me with all the lives lost, the protests, the legislative rulings. We're still subjected to severe systemic racism. It's too much. It is too much. Coach Chauncey is chiming in from California. Coach Chauncey, hope you're enjoying your vacation. Joan Garrity said, look, if it had been a black man, would that arrest been peaceful? Now, here's the thing I think is interesting. And Joan, your question, I mean, that's the question we always get. Come back with me for just a second here. January 6th, hundreds of people stormed the United States Capitol. Hundreds. Not dozens, hundreds of people. They had, zip ties. They had billy sticks. Somebody said they had taken, you know, pieces of wood and made into like a spear. They had weapons on. I'm talking about the guy who, I don't know what he was wearing, with the helmets and all of that. A number of them were in black, and they had face masks on, not just because of COVID-19, right? See, let's be clear. A number of folks from January 6th, they don't believe in masks, because we know that. Why? Because they'd already stormed down the Capitol in Annapolis. They'd already stormed in Michigan. No masks, set us free, looking to kidnap the governor. So we know they don't believe in masks. They had on masks on January 6th, so they couldn't be identified. I mean, let's be clear. They had their mask on. And some of them, not all of them, some of them looked very well trained. I mean, some of the ones that had the zip ties, and they said they had military training. They broke into the United States Capitol. Only one person got the woman who was shot. They crushed feet, arms, faces of police officers. You see police officers running from the January 6th insurgents, right? Let's call it what it is. That America, when we talk about being a force of democracy, democracy is fragile, y'all. It is. Democracy is fragile. January 6th, Donald Trump, the way they're gutting the Voting Rights Act, going after Section 5. What we've learned, democracy is fragile. And democracy also depends upon who's in the seat asking for it. One of my callers said yesterday, and something he said that's been staying with me all night long, he said, your freedom is actually essentially tied to other people. Now, I'm paraphrasing the wonderful statement that he said, but he used the example. I've been thinking about this all night. He used the example that I want to have the freedom to play my music as loud as I want, but my freedom is tied to me having neighbors. And with neighbors and quality of life rules, laws, and mandates, I can't just crank the music up to 200 decimals just because I have the freedom to do so. I want to have the freedom to drive 100 miles an hour. Well, your freedom is tied to other people, that we've decided as a society that it's not safe to drive at that speed. So we've set some laws in place to stop you. Freedom is tied to other people. Freedom ain't free. But Ray, if I can call him just Ray, Floyd Ray Roseberry, that's what he was asking for today. He was asking for his freedom, demanding his freedom. He wanted Joe Biden, President Biden, come out and talk to me because I want my freedom. After the January 6th riots, around 25,000 National Guards were deployed around the U.S. Capitol to maintain security for the inauguration of President Joe Biden. Remember that? When they had thousands of National Guards there, because they would take pictures and send them out. But they maintained a presence there for months. On April 2nd, Capitol Police Officer William Evans was killed and another officer was injured after they were rammed by a vehicle at the heavily guarded northern entrance to the United States Capitol. The suspect was shot and killed. Staff at the library was sent a security alert notifying them of the bomb threat. And so instead of reacting, which we have seen them do, they were able to negotiate. When I think about reaction and when I think about freedom and I think about the U.S. Capitol bombs, the Library of Congress, I go back for a second and I think about this black woman. Let me get her name here. I believe her name is Miriam Carey. Miriam Carey was the black woman who was driving her car. She was shot to death after a car chase, call it a car chase, by Capitol Police in October 2013. Miriam was not only shot by Capitol Police, but also by U.S. Secret Service officers. They said the restraint shown by the Capitol Police was a stark contrast, according to Miriam's sister, to how the same police agency treated her sister. To see the disparity in the treatment of individuals who have no respect for our nation's capital, vandalizing and actually committing assaults, and they get to walk away, this is Miriam Carey's sister, unharmed and not even arrested. She's talking about January 6th and then kind of chiming in on today. Let me go to the clip of Miriam Carey's sister, and then we'll come back to our conversation. So, no, wait a minute. We have the clips queued from Capitol Police Chief Tom Manger. Let's get him. Let's get an update. Then we'll go to Miriam's sister.
Is there a mental evaluation?
The first thing is going to be criminal charges that are placed. And then anything, there be any number of outcomes once he is goes before a judge.
But he's in federal custody. On this property, or where is he?
Well, he was just taken to custody moments ago, so I'm not sure if he's still there, if he's been taken. He's been moved away from the scene. All right, thank you all very much.
And let's go to some of our calls before I go to Miriam Carey. We have Carol on the line. Carol, how are you?
I'm great, Dr. Kate. Thank you ever so much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Hey, as usual, you are so on point. The comment that you made or the statement that you made regarding post-traumatic stress disorder for the slaves, but there should also be somebody to look into the post-traumatic stress disorder that the slave owners have as well, because in order for them to keep perpetuating this, there has to be something in their psyche that needs to be addressed. So I am agreeing with you wholeheartedly. That was a powerful statement. Thank you ever so much. That's
Thank
all
you
I
so
have
much.
To say.
And we have Jeff on the phone from Pasadena. Jeff, how are you?
Good afternoon, Dr. K.
Good afternoon. Thanks for calling.
Okay. I want you to just calm down. I can assure you and all the Trump haters out there, the vast, vast majority of us Trump supporters are not like this one guy today. We are not like the people we saw last summer, night after night after night, rioting, protesting, destroying things, and vandalizing things. Those are the people to be concerned about, not us Donald Trump supporters.
Let me ask you. I'm so glad you called, Jeff. So I get it. You're not like the folks that were out there last summer. You're not like the guy that was out there today. But you have to be like the folks that went into the Capitol on January 6th, because a number of them across the board said they were Trump supporters.
No, I'm not like that. If I was, I would have been there.
No, I'm saying, but not you individually. Remember, we're not talking about you individually or me individually. We're talking about people who are Trump supporters. You said Trump supporters are not like that.
Right.
But weren't those Trump supporters on January 6th rioting, vandalizing, people got killed, storming
first
the Capitol?
All,
like, can we put that on the table as well?
Okay. First of all, some of those people were infiltrators. The vast majority were Trump supporters. Some were infiltrators. That was a one-day thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had thousands of people rioting and protesting mm-hmm. in Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, mm-hmm. night after night after night, all summer long last mm-hmm. year. Not a one-day thing.
Now, do you
let me ask you this, Jeff,
because you mentioned that, but do you think we should also, in the conversation, take into account the response? Because, as you said, what happened last summer, but if you also look at the same data, the police were out there shooting rubber bullets, they were using tear gas, they were arresting people. None of that happened on January 6th.
Very little.
It was one day, but look at the mass amount of damage with nothing. People weren't arrested or shot tear gas on January 6th, and that was a horrific incident and stain on our country.
There was very little of that with all those nights of protest, the arrests and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people that were arrested all those nights last year were let right back out. And we know that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as this take back our country thing.
Yeah, what is that about?
Well, I'm going to say, I'm not so sure I believe in take my country back.
Mm.
What I am upset with, what I have issues with are things, and I'll just try to give a couple examples because of time-wise. I have a big problem with innocent unborn babies being mm-hmm. killed, but yet we keep cold-blooded murderers alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the argument, you might put someone to death who didn't commit the crime. I'm talking about when you've got video surveillance and you've got eyewitnesses to somebody killing people in cold blood, and the liberals want to have a bleeding heart and keep them people alive, but they want to kill innocent unborn babies.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, real quick, it kills me. The Democrats are the ones who say the more overpopulated our planet becomes, the worse global warming and climate change will become. Why do they love giving money to women? And this is not black or white. There are a lot of white women that have a lot of kids by a lot of different guys. Why do the Democrats love giving money to women having a bunch of kids mm-hmm. by a bunch of different guys out of my tax dollars?
Okay, so now I just want to lay out your three issues. One, you are against abortion. Against unborn babies being killed.
Right.
Now, let me just have a little bit of clarity. Do you include in that women that are pregnant and girls that are pregnant as a result of incest or rape? Are you including everyone, or are you separating
different.
Those out?
That's different.
Okay, that's what I want to be clear. If we're going to lay it on the table, I want to make sure we're on the same page. You are against abortion in cases other than the ones that I listed.
Right.
You are for the death penalty. If somebody has committed a crime, they should be put to death, right?
If they kill somebody in cold blood,
right.
And you've got video surveillance, you've
right.
got eyewitnesses, the DNA, there's no mistaking about it.
Right.
This person did it.
They should go.
Yes.
So like a Dylan Storm Roof, for example, the white guy that went into the Charleston church, instead of hanging out in prison, getting letters every week from his fans, he should have been killed, right? Because he gave the death penalty.
I would have been the one to flip the switch if they wanted me to.
Okay, good. So I'm just laying that out. And then the third thing is you have a concern about giving money through the form of assistance, social assistance, to women, and sometimes men are in the situation, when they are collecting money to offset rearing their children. Are you against the child income tax credit? Because that's something that Joe Biden put in place where they're sending out checks. And it's not about black or white. That is about income level. So that's actually going to full families in some cases.
That's another example. They're giving money to people that are having more kids. Well, I thought the Democrats are the ones who said the more populated the planet becomes, the worse climate change will be. They should be rewarding people who aren't making kids, who aren't overpopulating the planet.
So what do you think we should get? Now, how many children do you have, if you don't mind saying?
Zero.
You have no children. So you think you should get a check, other than the stimulus checks they've been giving out, which a lot of people didn't get those, but you think you should be rewarded because you don't have children?
I'll put it this way. They should reward people like me and you before the other people first. We're doing our job, and we're keeping the population plan, the population on the planet down. They're the ones that are saying we have to keep the population down. Well, people like you and me are doing that. Why are they not rewarding us, but rewarding the people who are overpopulating the planet?
Now, the first two comments, I was going a different direction. This one, I don't know. I'm like, you know, people, you're saying, very honestly, that's a conversation I had with my friends. They're like, look, I only have two kids, I get nothing. Or my kids are already 18, I get nothing. Or I make too much money, I get nothing.
Right. I'm talking about these women, black and white.
Black, Hispanic, Asian women and men.
Right. Who have four kids by four different guys.
Now,
five,
you know what?
Kids
now,
by five.
That piece I want to pull out, because really we're not talking about the number of people that you're having babies. Really what you're talking about, if I may just clarify, you're really talking about is the number of children, because you could have four babies by the same man and still get money because that's not what it is. It's really about you have a concern about people, because that's not the same women, about people having children that they cannot afford. Is that really what's the heart of it is? Because the people who have five, six, seven kids, and they're not getting any money because they're fine. You're saying people who have children, they cannot afford to take care of the children on their own. Now, black folks, white folks, and Hispanic folks who were born into a cycle of poverty, because poverty does exist for white folks from the Appalachian, white folks down in Tennessee, who are saying, look, I have children, and I don't have any money. You don't like the socialist parts of our society. Because some of these programs you're listing are kind of the socialist. I know we're not a socialist country, but these are socialist-type programs,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are.
All right, thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate you. Folks, today is when the left meets the right. You might say, you know, yes, today, if you are a conservative, if you are right-leaning called, understand, just like with Jeff, I'm not going to attack you. I may want to clarify what you're saying, but Thursdays is a day when the left meets the right, real talk. And there's no real talk if I cut you off, which is why Justina let Jeff continue, because I actually want to hear from you. We have Wesley on the phone from Reisterstown. Wesley, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Remember, slavery was the white man's sexual playground. Remember, cherry busting time? As you see the browning of America, you will also see white fragility also more than what it is now. Now, when John Henry Clark used to say, if you want a friend, look in a mirror, because if you think Europeans are going to come to some kind of reconciliation with you about anything, it's not going to happen, okay? Some demographers say in 1,000 or so years, there won't even be any Europeans on the planet, okay? So that's basically the big picture. But the other thing I want to mention is, and I think sometimes we overlook this, I don't even know why I'm saying it, but here it goes.
Okay.
Europeans never founded one single major religion. And a lot of people, I don't talk about Mormons, I don't talk about Seventh-day Adventists, I'm talking about Christianity. I can't call it Judaism, but the first Hebrews were Ethiopians. So the foundation of religion, as we know it, was an African thing, not a European thing.
Okay. Now, I appreciate for you putting that on the table, Wesley. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Folks, this notion of what's going to happen with the population numbers, because Wesley tapped on that, 1,000, there won't be any Europeans. I'm going to say, and I know that I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, Justine. This might be our last day, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. I'm not not even sure if in 1,000 years people are going to be here. I think the Earth is trying to heal itself. And the biggest threat to the planet right now, no, it's not animals. It's not my Bella Reds. Nope. It's not cicadas. No. The biggest threat to the planet right now are human beings. You and me. And you're like, well, I don't do anything. Did you drive your car today? Because if you did, unless you're driving one of those uber expensive electric cars, then you have contributed to global warming. Like, you're helping to kill the planet. You're like, no, I walked. Okay. Did you use the AC in your house today? Because if you did, then you'll contribute because you don't want to be hot. You're like, no, I don't even have central air. Okay. Did you get up and turn the lights on? Did you fry up some eggs? I'm just wondering. Did you go and take a shower? Did you get a Big Mac in the last couple of days, right? Because we know, no, really, if you talk about global, it is also about the amount of meat that we are consuming. We are. And we don't even have enough meat to meet the need with us. So why are they doing all these kind of putting stuff in the chickens and doing, child, if you really want to go down that path, and you're going to say, well, you know, global warming, you got to start with the biggest problem. I'm going to tell you, I'm not sure if he's listening to the show. I'm not sure the last time Jeff Bezos called in and made a donation to the show. But I think there's something to be said for a man spending that kind of money, destroying the planet in that type of way to fly straight up and fly straight down just because, as he said, my people, my employees, and you and me have given him enough money to do so. Yeah, we got to talk about this. When we come back, I got Mr. E on, I got Jason on. I'll have Lisa Covington joining me for a little bit to talk about this big revolution that's going on. Y'all, we are meeting the left and the right today, having real talk, and I want you to join the conversation. 410-319-8888 right after the break.